Last Sunday afternoon, I had a phone call from the drug and alcohol department at the Rouen North Shore Hospital. It seems a friend of mine had just taken an overdose of prescription medicine. Then, a few days later, I heard word from another friend, and a near relative of his had just committed suicide. Sometimes in our lives, things seem just completely too much to bear. That it seems that we're just tossed about on the wind and the waves. That there are powers so great that we just can't handle it. In our first reading tonight, we had a story of Job. Because Job was someone who had something to complain about. He'd lost everything, his family, his friends, his livelihood, his whole possessions. Everything he had to depend upon was gone. And so, of course, he complained and he carried on and he dragged God to the dock to ask him to defend himself against this loss of reputation and everything he had. And tonight we get something of God's response. It seems almost inadequate in comparison to all that Job went through. The people of God, the Israelites, were deeply petrified of the ocean. The sea came to represent everything that was dark, everything that was chaotic, everything that was evil. In the book of Daniel, it says that the sea monsters, strangely, come from the sea. We have, of course, in the first lines of Scripture, the story of God's creative work, where he begins to bring order from the chaotic oceans, from the tohu va-bohu. In the book of Exodus, the people of God, you know, find liberation and freedom. They get their escape from Pharaoh, and then they come face to face with this impenetrable sea, this impossible barrier, until God again brings order. And God again uses a mighty wind to create dry ground upon which they can cross to safety. Our psalm tonight is one of many that shares this image of the terrifying and bewildering power of the storm and the sea, and the God who has power even over those storms, even over the waves. All four Gospels record this particular incident, this particular night when the disciples were all in this little rickety boat as they made for the other side, as they continued to go on their journey. And of course, the boat became the great image of the church. The boat became that sign of the presence of Jesus gathering with us, journeying with us as we set forth to go to places that were often dark and dangerous, places that were often uncharted. And in the midst of this, of course, this massive storm blows up. Now, they're fishermen. They're used to the Lake of Galilee. They're used to the weather conditions that normally arise. But on this particular night, clearly, it's a pretty impressive storm. They're just scared, witless. They've got no idea how they're going to get through this. This tiny little boat is just being tossed and bobbed around. And they know that if the waves continue to break over the bow of the boat, that they will be swamped, they will be overwhelmed, and they will go down. It's, again, that sign of all in our lives that just seem out of control. We can't handle it. It's too much. And it's there. It's in that place that we're invited to trust. It's in that place that we're invited to turn to the Lord, to cry out to Jesus, to do the same as the disciples eventually did, to go and wake him up. It's kind of pathetic, isn't it, that he's there and it says, he even gives you the detail that he had his head on a cushion. Always intrigued by that. He's just not just sitting there, lying there, happened to fall asleep. He's taken the time to fluff up the feather cushion and get it all nice and comfortable while the rest of them are petrified. And they wake him up and they make their great plea. And then it says, and then he wakes up. So they wake him up, they give him their request, and only then does he wake up. And of course, what happens? With a simple word, with one command, the waves and the wind die down. And the disciples witness that same creative power of God that they would have seen at the first dawn of creation. The disciples witness the great authority of God to bring order, to restore and renew our deepest desires. They find that ability to trust in the power of the word of Jesus. Jesus, of course, represents everything that is possible in our lives. As Jesus lies there, that great authority is present in him. But he sleeps because the disciples haven't yet remembered to wake him. They haven't yet gone to him. They haven't yet cried out to him. The fathers of the church saw in this image a sign for us, a reminder to us that we have to keep clinging, we have to keep trusting in the goodness of God. When there's so much darkness in our own lives, when the storms just seem to overwhelm us, that perhaps in the lives of friends, perhaps in our own lives, we need to be that beacon. We need to be the ones who know to cry out to God, to place our trust in him, to really allow that gift to be the source of hope and of new life for us. Surely on this feast, that is the witness that Mary gives as well. Mary's heart is immaculate because she learned to trust in Jesus. Her heart is immaculate because she knew the power of his love. She knew to trust in him. She knew the goodness and mercy that she saw in him. It's not about her, it's not about what she achieved, but it's in her desire. And it's that that she can teach us. It's that gift to continue, no matter how fierce the winds, no matter how big the waves, to continue to trust in the new creation power of Jesus and to really see in him a place where we can find refuge, a heart that we can seek to be loved, to find shelter, to ride out the storms that will continue to arise in our lives. But with him and in the power of his love, we can find shelter, we can find rest, and we know that there is the authority of God to calm and to quieten every storm, to allow us to safely reach the other shore. And there is hope.